Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
And we are all here to talk about how to stay on the right side of employment law and the CQC. So welcome, ladies.
Hello, Jim.
Thank you very much for joining us today for what's going to be an exceptionally interesting conversation, I believe. So we may as well just start, get right into it. I'll start off with Sarah, if that's all right. One of the key things for employers to do is to provide clarity of expectations to employees. Could you explain what this exactly means for our listeners and why it's so important?
Yeah, absolutely, Sian. In practice, one of the main issues that I come across is that practice owners tend to give me a ring when they've had enough of a member of staff, and it's got to the point where they're thinking the only way I can get out of this situation is to bring their employment to an end. So they will come and say to me, I want to terminate this member of staff, because by that point they've lost their patience with them. And I always say to them, well, have you actually told them that you're not happy with maybe the way they're performing, or you're not happy with them being late, or you're not happy with the amount of absence they're having? Because ultimately, it all starts with setting the standard of behaviour that you expect from a member of staff, and often that conversation is missed. So it's really important that as a practice owner or a practice manager, you take on board that an employee may not actually know what is expected of them. So before you've actually had those conversations and you've set the standard and the expectation and given them targets to improve, there's not a lot you can do in the long run. Because I would always say to you, let's go back to the beginning and let's start having these conversations. Only once when you've had those conversations, if they're not working, then we can move on to more formal proceedings, whether that's disciplinary or capability or whatever it may be.
And do you have anything to add to that, Nikki, your experience?
Yeah, I totally agree with Sarah. It's actually setting standard, in the first instance. So part of your recruitment processes are actually giving that potential employee your policies and procedures, taking them through them, getting them to sign them off once you are taking them on board, so they absolutely know what the bottom line is. It's then taking them through a thorough induction, which is the start of their training in your practice. It's actually setting the scene, setting the standard, starting to build that trust and that respect. If you're a consistent manager, you'll be an effective manager. And so long as you've got an open door policy and your communication's robust, hopefully that helps to mitigate the circumstances that Sarah has to deal with, day after day.
And Sheila, when it comes to tackling issues with team members, what's the best way to do this without causing upset, do you think?
Okay, well, in the ideal world, we'll already have had these conversations, so everybody knows what's expected of them at work, whether it's about performance or it's about behaviour or whatever it is that people are doing in the practice. And the main thing we have to do is to have the courage to have a conversation with each team member every time something has to be dealt with. I don't want issues to be left undealt with, and I don't want issues to be allowed to fester. Nipping things in the bud is really important. So my managers need confidence to go straight in there with a useful conversation with their team members. It's important not to go in when they're feeling angry, because even if they use the best framework for the conversation in the world, if there's anger or frustration in their voice or in their face or in their body language, the team member will spot that and react defensively. We won't be in a good place to solve any problems. So we have to take a deep breath, calm ourselves down, and say to ourselves, exactly what was it that the team member just did that caused the problem there? And have a conversation based on exactly what they did, not and this is really important, the reason that the manager thinks the team member did it for. And here, in the big example I use is the difference between talking to someone about using their own language or saying something too quickly and calling them aggressive. If you think I've been aggressive, that's what you think caused me to do it, you might be wrong, and I will argue with you. I would find it hard to argue with the fact that I said X, or I said X in a certain way. So tackle me by explaining exactly what you've just observed. Tell me what the problem with that is, even if you think it's obvious. It's the impact of my behaviour or my performance that gives me the reason or the need to change. So you have to explain it, you have to lay it out for me nice and clearly, nice and calmly. And then we have to come to some agreement about what I'm going to do next. And the temptation is for most managers to just tell me what to do. But tell me this, Sian, how do you feel when somebody tells you what to do?
I'm not going to do it.
Exactly.
You
have or
like a child again, don't you? Yeah. You've been ticked off by a parent. Yeah. I'm like a parent.
Or what you might be tempted to do is to tell me you're going to do it, knowing full well you're not. So telling you what to do isn't helpful.
No.
And nobody likes it. So don't tell me anything. Your job is not to tell me what to do, even if you know exactly what I have to do. It's easy for you to see what I should be doing. Don't tell me. You'll upset me. Or you'll cause me not to want to engage with you. Instead, ask me how I can achieve what it is that we need to achieve, and let me work out how to do it. For example, there are 24 different ways of losing weight. If you tell me your favourite diet, I'll go, yeah, because I know it can be done, but I won't do it. If I'm going to lose weight, I have to tell you how I'm going to do it. And it's exactly the same with how I answer the phone, or how I sterilise instruments, or how I greet patients walking into the practice. I've got to make that decision. And that's a basic framework that I work with my managers to teach them how to have these conversations. It's hard work, and it goes against the grain, and you have to practice.
Definitely a lot of practice involved. You don't get it right the first time. It's like getting on a bike, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very wobbly in the first instance, but the more you do it, you're then ready to tackle the hills and the lumps and bumps in the road.
And you get the results.
Absolutely.
Hope that helps.
Yes, very much so. I'm just thinking about the listeners out there and how actually that would make an awful lot of sense, that it's about setting the expectations of what's required.
Definitely.
Within the role from the outset. And then if somebody's not meeting those expectations, it's just about revisiting those expectations. Mm-hmm. Very calmly, very objectively, very factual based, to then get the outcome of the employee kind of saying, well, actually, that's what you want me to do. That's not what I'm doing currently. This is how I'll get there.
And that's what helps to develop teams, it helps develop team members, and it helps the job to get done.
Mm. Absolutely.
Sarah. It's okay. I also think when you're having those conversations, you often find out information that you're not aware of. So there may be a reason why the member of staff cannot undertake the task that you've given them to do. It may be that there's something else going on in the background, and until you've started speaking to them, it might seem really easy to you, but there may be something else. So for example, I have a client who their receptionist couldn't do the archiving, and my client was getting really frustrated because he was like, is the alphabet? Like, how can they not go A, B, C? Like, every time I go, it's wrong. And it's like, well, have you told her that there's this issue? No, I haven't spoken to her about it. Went in and had a conversation with her. And actually, it turned out that she was dyslexic. And she doesn't have to say to the practice owner, she doesn't have to disclose that information. But the only way the practice owner could find out was to have those type of conversations. And therefore, we realised that we then had a duty as the employer to put some adjustments in place to help her do the filing correctly.
Mm-hmm. So that was a problem solved.
Absolutely.
It wasn't, a discipline.
That solved it.
Yeah. This is not about discipline.
No.
When somebody does something that's not quite right in the practice, we don't go in there thinking they're wrong, we're going to punish them.
No.
If we do that, we fail. We go in there thinking there's something not quite right here, how can we help them to do this well?
Yeah.
Go in with curiosity, go in with helpfulness, and those attitudes take you a long way.
Yeah.
helping to get people to do things better, to feel better about their work, to enjoy their work, to give more to the practice, and to develop the practice as we go forward.
I think that's a really good kind of set of statements to go into a meeting with, because people who maybe are listening now and think, yes, I need to set out the expectations, and then I need to just have a cool, calm conversation with somebody as to why they're not meeting those expectations. But if they've got somebody in their team at the moment who isn't really performing how is expected, but they haven't set the expectations to start off with, they might not feel as comfortable having that conversation. But actually going in and thinking, this is just a bit of a fact find to find out, so why is it that you're not doing this? I've had a preconception in my mind why you're not doing it, because it's been happening potentially for a while and I haven't mentioned it. And as a manager myself, I understand how easy it is to do that, but actually to go in with a fact find.
I think, Sean, you know, you're saying setting expectations. It's doing that in the first instance. But one of the things that CQC are now laying out is that the team have an intelligent awareness of policies, procedures, how they should behave in the practice, and that all comes under the well-led key line of inquiry. So when you drill down into it, it's about good leadership, good management, and good governance. The only way you can achieve that and maintain it is by a consistent approach, and that is supported by ongoing communication. So regular team meetings, keep bringing your team up to date on the changes in legislation, what that means to them in practice, how that should be translated into what they do day after day after day. Because if they're not keeping up to speed, and as a provider and a registered manager with CQC, if you're not doing those things, they're the team members that are going to let you down in an inspection. And one of the things I'm seeing a lot of currently is inspectors taking a nurse into the decontamination area, pulling out practice policies and procedures, and actually asking the nurse to go through the process, and what's written in paper should be exactly what that nurse is doing day to day. So it's about those conversations, setting the standard, but reviewing them, constantly reviewing them as well.
So in the instance with behaviour, you might find you've got to add to the policy, you've got to change the clarified duties, got to change what we expect of people's behaviour. And you're right, Sian, you can go straight in there with, this isn't right, let's see if we can solve it, find an issue. Now, do we need to put something into the policies to protect other people from doing this? So it's a living system.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think you've got to have a living document. So they've got to be reviewed. And I think within appraisals, job descriptions need to be reviewed as well. A lot of practices I go into don't even have a job description. So it's not laying out that framework in the first instance. But I think when you've got them and you're using them, and you should, it's highly recommended that you do. Again, they're reviewed annually, because as your practice is evolving, as we're being influenced by the economy, by politics, by CQC, governance, whatever it might be, everybody's roles are changing as well. Mm-hmm. So everybody's got to understand how that fits in to the bigger business picture as well.
So potentially then having all the CQC regulations helps give a framework for
absolutely.
Building, communication,
I think people inherently see it as a bad thing, causing us stress, more hard work. But actually, what's happening is CQC has given us a framework for best practice across the board. We can't get away from it, so why not embrace it and be the best that we can be and get that big outstanding sticker?
From an employment law perspective, the CQC didn't introduce anything new. So it didn't introduce anything that shouldn't have been in place already. Equality and diversity came in the 70s, but all CQC did was put it to the forefront of everybody's minds that actually we should be looking at equality and diversity within the practice. You know, recruitment procedures have been in place for years and in a different set of legislation. So from an employment law perspective, it didn't bring anything in addition to the practice owner as to what they should be doing.
So let's take a scenario that we can hear quite regularly of having a problem where a nurse whose work is good, but who's sullen and uncommunicative with the team, particularly a dentist. The rest of the team are feeling uncomfortable. In this situation, how would you advise that the manager tackles this? Sheila.
Okay. Well, this is quite an interesting one. I think the first thing I would do would be to go in there and say, well, what do you mean by sullen and uncommunicative? I'd like you to give me some examples, please, of what the behaviour is that this nurse is exhibiting that you think is sullen. And it might just be keeping quiet in meetings. It might be not answering questions that the team or not engaging in conversations with the team. We have to identify as clearly as we can what it is she's actually doing. So it's got to come down to what you can see and what you can hear. There's another issue in this example where you've said the rest of the team are feeling uncomfortable. Have you got the team's permission to tell this member of staff how they feel about her? Because if you haven't, you can't tackle it. The best you can do is observe what's going on. So you might be able to go to the nurse and say, Shan, I've noticed that when the team come in the morning, everyone comes in saying good morning, and you don't seem to engage or even look at the team members when they come in, or whatever it is that she's doing. Now, I'm a bit worried about this because I feel in the first instance that it might make everybody else a little bit less willing to engage with you as the day goes on, or they might not like you so much for it. Tell me what's going on here. Tell me, is there any reason why you've suddenly stopped saying hi to everybody? Anything I can help with? Hopefully wait for some answers. And maybe you'll go on to a few more questions, including, well, what do you think we can do to help? And we're looking for answers all the time. So that would be the place I would start. Does that help?
Yes, it does. It really does. Nikki, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's about consistent management. I think I mentioned that earlier. And if you're a consistent manager and you're displaying consistent behaviours, as Sheila's mentioned, then you are setting the expectations, and each team member knows the consequences of that. So, and I've been in many practices where there's a team member who sets the scene for the day. You know, one day they can be bringing in the cakes and being, you know, a little ray of sunshine. The next day they're the one who doesn't talk, avoids eye contact with everybody, just gets head down and does the bare minimum. So it's how do you get the right balance? It's very, very difficult. So it's getting that consistent approach. It's actually having regular conversations with them. Like Sheila said, asking the question, what's going on in their heads? Why are they behaving like that? How can they see things going forwards? How if they are, you know, facing issues, how do you support them as a manager to ensure that their behaviour is consistent as well? And as a consistent manager, that then drives staff behaviours and they become more consistent as well.
I think one of the things about being a consistent manager is that you should be tackling all of these issues every time they happen. You never lose them. You never
absolutely.
Let them fester. You jump on them as soon as you can.
Yep,
and as soon as you notice that somebody comes in and is behaving differently, or it might even be behaving differently. Maybe you've let her get away.
Definitely.
Coming
and
in,
a lot of managers do that, don't they?
And the longer you leave it, the more they think that's normal. You've put up with it for six months. Why should I change?
Yeah. Exactly.
So we have to jump on issues like this as soon as we spot them. And we tackle them whilst they're still small issues, before they cause big upset, before everybody really does hate her, or before people start avoiding her, or whatever it is that could happen as a result of this behaviour.
Because resentment does kick in very, very, very quickly, and then you get all the behind the scenes gossiping and backstabbing, and that is destructive to the whole culture and the practice.
I agree with what Sheila and Nikki have both said. What I would say is that it is time consuming. I think that's one of the main elements that practice managers face. This is just one small action that they will have to take on a regular basis. So, for example, if she's coming in every day, it's not going to be one conversation, it's going to be several conversations, but you've got to stick with it. And we appreciate that it's time consuming and it's difficult, but it has to be done and it has to become part of the practice manager's role.
Actually, when I hire new managers into positions, I'm very clear with both principals or owners and managers that their job is to get 10% more out of everybody else in the team, including the boss. So if that takes 50 or 60% of the time they're being paid for to get 10% more out of everybody else, the effect on the business is huge. Mm-hmm. And I don't care. You can farm out the accounts and you can get somebody in to help you do all the admin that you have there, or you can delegate it. But leading the team, managing the team, helping the team to do more, to nurture them, to give more to the business and to achieve more in the business is invaluable. And I think that is where managers pay for themselves.
Definitely. Exactly. And, you know, going back to what we were saying before about the CQC, they're giving managers that framework to be good leaders, to manage well, and, you know, to set the scene for good governance. So, you know, let's drill down into those, well, you know, that well-led key line of inquiry and start using the tools that we've been given.
Which is what you're saying there. So looking at why don't practices sometimes fail their CQC inspections, why does this happen within those key lines of inquiry?
Generally speaking, the breaches and the failures that we're seeing are within well-led. So, you know, it's because these things aren't happening. Everything we're talking about around this table now, the lack of inductions, the poor recruitment processes, just taking somebody on board, throwing them into the mix and expecting them to get on with it.
Not giving them feedback.
No feedback, no appraisals, all those kind of things are now obligatory. And the practices that are failing under well-led are failing because there's a lack of those things. There isn't a structure that they're not... setting the scene, like we said, you know, in the first instance, and that team member's not being supported and managed and developed from day dot. And that is one of the main failing points.
So if you've got a member of the team who is dragging their heels a bit, the rest of the team are really pulling in the same direction, going that extra mile, what things can you do to gain commitment from that team member who's kind of fallen behind a bit, so that they're going in the same direction as the rest of the team? Okay.
Goes back to consistency again, having those conversations and potentially putting an action plan in place that you're revisiting constantly with that team member so that, you know, they understand the bigger picture as well as what they're there to achieve personally. And I think if you're setting a common goal for the whole team and they're all, you know, focused on that, they will help drive each other. And one thing that does tend to work very well in practice is to have an incentive scheme, a team incentive scheme. So those people who are, you know, going the extra mile tend to then manage that team member. And, you know, if they're not, you know, pulling together, that team member often backs themselves into a corner if they're not committed and accountable. And sometimes they then decide to leave. So, you know, for the manager, that consistent behaviour then reflects on staff behaviour. And if there is that dysfunctional team member, it's not a nice word, but, you know, that's what they are. Yes, it can work either way, that they pull together, they start working, and they are accountable, or they decide to leave.
Yeah, I totally agree. And at the end of the day, you'd never really want to get to this stage, but there are laws and regulations that will assist a dental practice owner or manager. So if at the end of the day they're a bad egg and you've done everything and you've been having these conversations with them and they're not improving, then of course there are disciplinary procedures for you to evoke. It's emotional, it's time consuming, it's incredibly stressful in using these formal proceedings. So they're always a last resort, but don't ever feel as though you're stuck, because there's always something that you can do.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, ladies.
Thanks, John.
Thank
very
you.
Very enlightening today. And we hope to maybe have some more time with you in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.